You're listening to the Winnabus.net podcast network.
Winnabus.net has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years. But there's a side to them many of you have never heard. The subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Pub, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to oneofus.net and don't forget your towel.
Are going to come out of the Great Wall with is, was Matt Damon trying to do an accent or not? I couldn't tell.
Yeah, no, he absolutely
sporadically.
I'm
not sure what it was.
He was doing the maybe kind of fake, maybe I'm from Ireland, maybe I'm from Scotland bullshit.
I don't know many words.
There wasn't any Scottish in there. There was an attempt at some kind of generic English.
Yeah, it felt vaguely Irish.
Occasionally Irish.
It felt like? It felt like that guy who's like born in Ireland, lived there till he was like 10, and then moved to America, and he's been here for like 20-30 years.
No,
he's kind of got that little taint of Irish.
He sounds like an American who recently discovered that he has Irish relatives.
True.
In America, the further south you go, the more like southern sounding your accent is. If he started north and then went to Spain and then kept going south, like they said in the movie, like he would get that redneck version of whatever his original accent was.
Sean Connery in Highlander.
There right. You go.
Wait. Who was supposed to be Spanish, right?
Well, he was supposed to be Egyptian.
He's supposed to be Egyptian.
Egyptian, okay. Yes. And yet, for some reason, was clearly Scottish.
So, tell me about this land you call Scotland.
Well,
and then the Frenchman says, well, it is, we had the heather, and we like the single malt scotch, you know, the whiskey.
So that's how they talk in Scotland, right?
Yes.
I learned everything I know about regional accents from watching Highlander. So this film kind of, I think, has flown underneath a lot of like big audiences' radars, partially because I don't think they're quite the distributors here. I mean, they're cautiously optimistic. They're like, boy, wouldn't it be great if these big shared Chinese American productions would start taking off here so we don't have to do as much of the work. And this is definitely more Chinese than an American production,
highly.
But still, definitely the biggest cross-production I think ever been made between two giant production studios coming together to make this thing, taking a director who I believe this is his first even mildly English language film, Zhang Yimou, and putting him in with a largely Chinese cast, but then you've got a Spaniard, Pedro Pascal,
Game of Thrones. He's just Oberyn Martell.
Yeah, Oberyn Martell.
It's Oberyn Martell and Jason Bourne go to Chinese Middle Earth.
Yes. Yes, pretty much.
And fight monsters.
Yes. I thought they were, when I watched the trailers, I got the impression they were supposed to be more dragon-y, but they're really kind of more like Godzilla spawn.
Yeah,
from
they're
the
very
90s
much.
Movie.
There's kind of, if you look, there's a monster design that has been kind of going on for the last 15 years or so, and they're very much like that, and people are like, oh yeah, this is this original new monster that's no one's seen before, and it's like, nope, people have been doing this since Hellboy, think of something new.
I think the reason they look like dragons in the trailer is because there was so much fire coming out, I thought they were like fire-spitting monsters, which that is not the case at all.
No, it is not. It's just a lot of fire around them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so Matt Damon and Pedro Pascal are two of the only two left of a group that has wandered into China searching after the mythical black powder.
It's really annoying because the opening scene is just them going, Marco! Marco! Marco!
There is no polo.
Also, speaking of accents, if Pedro Pascal was supposed to be Spanish, Spanish people don't actually call each other amigo. That is what Americans think that Mexicans do. So, again, Over two on the accents front here.
Well, the guy who directed this, English isn't his first language.
I mean, we were watching a movie the other day from the 90s that had a guy who was supposed to be Japanese, and he was Chang.
Let's be fair. That's not an accent. That's an idiomatic question. Yeah. Pedro Pascal's Spanish accent is perfectly fine.
Yeah, because he's actually Spanish. But anyway, so the two of them wandering along, they come across this monster-type creature, and are like, wait, well, we barely saw that thing before we killed it. What was it?
No, we didn't see it.
And then,
but all of a sudden, there's a gruesome hand.
On the run from raiders, they come across the Great Wall. Yes, the titular Great Wall in China that goes on and on. People are like, what is it there for? What were they trying to protect? Well, as they discover...
Yeah.
Well, yes, but in this
actually,
movie...
The bandits that you are actually running from. Oh, and also Westerns.
And of course, in this movie, giant crazy monsters with eyes
and here's
on the
thing,
side of their
like,
head.
This movie lets you know very early on, like, any, like, hey, that didn't really happen, that's not historically valid, but, boy, you toss that the fuck out. Just don't even do that. Don't. It'll just get in your way, you know. Go ahead and let this movie be what it is, which is, it's a fantasy. And
oh, completely.
It just happens to be, it happens in China, with great big quotes about it. But, yeah, it's basically like, you know... Middle Earth is Europe. This is China.
Well, I mean, with very strong undertones of like, by the way, you know how that whole thing about y'all being individual and just doing stuff for yourself? Well, that doesn't work out so well. Once you learn to fight for the state and country,
yes,
you discover
yes.
that,
oh,
that
this
life
is,
is
there,
that
there
big.
Are highly collective overtones.
This is an incredibly Chinese film. And I don't just mean like, oh, look, they hired some Chinese actors. The weird thing about this is an American-written script, but so clearly done with an eye to getting past what the Chinese censors are going to want, which is pivotal in any kind of film, but also in very definitely appealing to Chinese sensibilities. There's some moments and some beats in the narrative that I was looking at going like, it's going to be really interesting to see how this plays with a broader American audience.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just not the traditional American three-act... post Die Hard kind of action film.
No, it's more like
it's very much a wushu.
They get there, and the battle starts.
Yeah,
and then it goes on for the rest of the movie.
And I think it's also like this clocked in at just a little over an hour and a half.
Yeah,
like,
about an hour and 40 minutes.
And they have obviously they have whittled this down quite a bit for American audience.
I mean, maybe I still can't find anything referencing how much, if at any, it's been edited.
It really feels like there's some character dynamics there that you're like, oh, I'll bet that person was, you know, had a bigger role in the director.
About that because the number of films that we watch from somebody like Welgo, it just feels like that's the, you know, you'll get these very Spartan single moments that's a character definition point.
Mm-hmm.
And a Chinese audience seemingly is much more, Chinese cinematic audiences are much more accepting of those kind of character beats. And they don't need...
yeah, because they want to get to the fight.
Yeah, they don't need... there's less of the ancillary character build out mm-hmm. that you expect from an American film. It really is a fascinating narrative study. This to me felt like a Chinese film written by Western writers who went, well, to make some real money back in the States, we've got to get Matt Damon in there.
Right.
You know, there was a lot of concern that this was going to be basically Matt Damon goes to China
and saves the day.
And that is very definitely not what happens.
Agreed.
Here.
You can't tell me this didn't come up in conversation. Hey, can this knight be from Boston?
Yeah.
At one point,
if only
he negotiated
Ben Affleck
that.
Had directed this. No, actually, and just to get the accusations of whitewashing out of the way, director Zhang Yimou said, in many ways, the Great Wall is the opposite of what is being suggested, which is the whitewashing thing. For the first time, a film deeply rooted in Chinese culture with one of the largest Chinese casts ever assembled is being made at tentpole scale for a world audience. I believe that is a trend that should be embraced by our industry, and I don't disagree, actually. I thought it got really precious with people like, oh, how dare you!
Yeah. They came on the cusp maybe of this, of making him Mary Sue-ish, but he's the fucking hero. I mean, you can't take that away, man. If you make him into a schlep, then it's not going to work. And I think there's a lot of tit for tat in this, insofar as Matt Damon's character arc and what makes him dynamic in this is that, you know, he is an absolute mercenary when he comes into this culture, and then by the end of the film, he's learned a lot about sacrifice and duty and collectivism.
And collectivism, yes, indeed.
And a very platonic romance with Jiang Chan, yes, as Commander Lin Mei of the Crane Troop. Because, and he goes, what do the Crane Troop do? Oh my god, some of the nuttiest fight
sequences. They weaponized bungee jumping is what they fucking did.
I mean, whatever you say about the you know, the characters are pretty wafer thin. And the story is as well. I actually expected like a major, slightly more story than there is.
No,
there's
really
not. Yeah, the big monsters that they kind of do a little like, you know, behind the scenes, what a workshop thing where it's like, and then the monsters came, but it's basically just like, yeah, meteor came because we had a greedy emperor. It sucked.
Yeah, there's not a lot of deepness in the plot, but it doesn't really require it there to be, because it moves quickly enough. It really, I mean, the one character who really has any sort of arc is Matt Damon, which is that Chinese collective thing we're talking about. Yeah. You know, you Westerners, watch Matt Damon. You love him.
Willem Dafoe inexplicably turning up in a subplot that, yeah, I mean, this clocks in at a brisk 140 minutes. It could have run at 120 and completely removed Willem Dafoe, who's there for no good reason and a marginal payoff.
Yeah, I often...
But isn't it even like to him?
Actually, but here's the thing, though. There was a guy who sat down next to me. The first thing he said is, oh, is that Willem Dafoe on the poster? Man, I love that guy.
You don't know how to say his name.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, if there was a longer Chinese cut, I suspect that he's even more of a sniveling bad guy in that version.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely like, you know, if... you get Matt Damon, who is more of the noble explorer towards the end, and then you get Pedro Pascal, who is definitely the like, nope, still a mercenary.
He's the sidekick.
Yeah, really. And he's the pragmatist of the bunch, whereas you get a lot more like the bad stuff about Westerners going to non-Western places with Willem Dafoe.
Well, let me say, like, one of the things I think really works, though, is that there's actually really good chemistry between Matt Damon and Pedro Pascal.
Oh, yeah.
And some genuinely funny lines between the two of them. You're like, oh, they are fun to watch on screen together. And I love that as well that, like,
I would like them to go to other fake medieval settings and do wacky hijinks.
I think that actor had the same effect in Narcos. Yeah. I forget the main character in that. But no, every scene that he's in with that character, he makes that guy look better. He's just one of those actors.
Yeah, I really like him. He's been in a couple different small, like, foreign things that I really
like. If
enjoy.
Only he wouldn't lose his head so easily.
But, I mean, and let's also point out, this is probably very pretty. I say probably because, okay, let's get this out of the way here.
Warning.
If unless you can be sure that the cinema you're going to see this in replaces the bulbs on its projection pretty regularly, do not go see this film in 3D.
Yeah.
We just spent basically an hour and a half all going,
sweating.
What the hell is that? Because this is quite detailed. The 3D is actually when it works pretty good. There's a lot of detail. The monsters come in huge, this huge swathe. So there's, you know, tens of thousands of these things on screen at any one point in time, which means what we got to see was basically a lot of green blobs.
Yeah, well, I mean, I wanted
out of focus and very dim.
I was worried.
It was very frustrating.
I was worried about the monster effects because the early trailers I saw, they did not look spectacular.
And they never do.
But it was hard. I can't even gauge it. All I can say is what I saw, they looked like pretty badass monsters to me. And they did some cool stuff with them. You know, this is Zhang Yimou, who's like a master of like working with cinematography. He's made some beautiful art films. This is his first big blockbuster. And you can see...
No, House of Flying Daggers.
You're right. I'm sorry, House of Flying Daggers. But you can totally see his sensibility throughout this thing. There's a lot of really gorgeous shots throughout this. There's a scene in a tower towards the end that's all stained glass.
And that was so frustrating because I was like, this is clearly beautiful. I wish I could see it in its full glory, which is one of the problems I think that we face with 3D. It's not that 3D is a problem. It's that 3D projection is often shittily and lazily done, and we really suffered from that this evening, and it really affected our ability to, I think, truly appreciate how good or bad this was.
So
we're kind of almost limping along on, like, 80% of a review here, folks. And we're really sorry about that. But what, blame the projectionist.
But what does keep you going through this thing, even though, like I said, people worried, well, it doesn't sound like there's much of a plot. Doesn't sound like there's much characterization. Well, one of the characters in this film is essentially all the nifty weapons the Chinese have that keep rolling out one after another. And you're like, whoa, that was awesome. And, really, a good hour and 15 minutes of this hour and 40-minute film is just giant battle scenes as they, it's never just the same thing. It's always, it keeps adding. Okay, now we're going to do something totally different than we did the last time. And, some of the really cool one-on-one sequences with characters on top of the wall fighting single or one or two of these things at once. You're like, damn, that was badass. Yeah. There's quite a few ooh moments with these things, which I don't usually expect in a people versus CG monsters type movie. But I guess if anybody knows how to give those to you, it's the Chinese.
Oh, yes.
But let's go to final thoughts. Kyle, why don't you start us out?
I really like this. I'm not going to lie. I thought this thing was gorgeous. Yeah, our screen was kind of dim, but the thing I noticed 20 minutes into this movie is it didn't really feel like a Matt Damon movie to me. It felt like all these characters in this army, like, together, yeah, they are kind of this collective ant hive, but they made up this character that was kind of
just like the inscrutable Chinese.
I don't know. It was really interesting, and it made me. It reminded me of like the Olympics in China. Just like seeing them orchestrate these huge sequences, not only with like a bunch of actors. Oh, what are you doing? Anyways, no, the thing looks gorgeous. Story, it moves fast enough to where you're not really missing it. I'd give it 8 sexy flying cranes.
Bo?
This movie, it's spectacle, it's myth. And if you go in with that realization and you're not looking for, this is you're glossing a bullfinch's mythology here. You are not, reading fucking Lord of the Rings. That said, there is enough spectacle in this, and despite the poor illumination factor, it was pretty obvious to me that the effects were seemed to be very well done. I found the battle scenes very engaging, and it had a lot of stuff that followed into my wheelhouse, like color coordinated armies and really cool uniforms for each different service branch.
It did have a bit of a Power Rangers vibe,
and I'm really into shit like that. So I had enough to keep me occupied. There's not a lot of story here. Matt Damon goes to China, fights monsters on the wall. Okay. That's what you get. And I think at as short a time as this movie is clocking in, that's really all you need. This is this is good eye candy. Nothing more, nothing less. It's a good little flashbang. I give it I give it 8 color coordinated sets of armor out of 10.
Richard?
I think this film proves in a lot of ways that Chinese production houses can make $135 million go a very long way. This is epic in the just kind of the scale of the battle sequences, which is really what you're here for. It's lots of people kind of flying in, carving up monsters, or getting carved up by monsters. Matt Damon is perfectly passable. Jiang Qian is, I think, was actually really good in this. If you're expecting Zhang Yimou to do, if the last thing you saw him do was Red Sorghum, you'll be very, very shocked that this is the same director. I mean, it's workmanlike from that point of view, but him even just being journeyman big scale director is really, really solid. I think it's going to be interesting, like I said, to see how American audiences respond to a very, very Chinese paced and formatted script.
Mm-hmm.
Which is going to be really fascinating to see how that plays. But this evening it seemed to play pretty well, I've got to say.
Yeah.
I'll give this 7 out of 10 mama birds being fed by baby bird. Wait and see. That'll pay off, kids.
And once again, as we say Chinese paced in this particular case, we mean really, really fast paced.
Yeah.
Not much time to slow down for, like, advancing the plot, because the entire plot is, will Matt Damon continue to be a selfish mercenary, or will he
Will he rejoin the Hong Kong opera and find the love of his life, as was promised in the first... Oh, wait, that's Razor Red Lantern.
Well, it's not entirely different from that. or will he realize the glory that comes with fighting for something bigger than yourself? You know, which you can definitely say there's lots of American films that have taken that same tack, just not with the Chinese army, who is so pretty here. What great uniforms they have. This has just got a great sense of design across the board here.
It really is. It's the Dynamon army. And now, Dyna Blue, you will move out onto the field. Now, prepare Dyna Black for ground assault.
It's like there were 150,000 Power Rangers. All segmented in their own color groups. It's just, this is fun to watch. It's nothing that's, like, I think is going to be considered to be groundbreaking or anything, but I don't think you're going to be disappointed going to see it if you're expecting what the trailers are showing you. Super fast-paced, lots of neat stuff to see here. One thing I didn't even comment on, Andy Lau, who's one of the most legendary Hong Kong actors since of the modern age, is given very little to do here, which surprises me for a guy who's been in a ton of, hey, we can all basically fly type martial arts films.
Well, I will say that at this point in his life, Andy Lau is A, old, and B, probably pretty sore.
Probably.
You know, I'll give him an afternoon.
Probably broken a few hundred bones by this point. So, yeah, I guess we'll give him a little bit of a break.
The man is powder and beef at this point.
Yeah. But overall, everybody's really good in this thing, and it's the creature design is cool. I'm going to give this 7.5 out of 10 new pages that have to be added to the monster manual. Because, yeah.
I'm just wondering why the girl army in this wasn't pink.
Because that's not the way it works.
But blue is for boys.
Not in this case. And it was powder egg blue.
Oh, well, that does explain why Matt Damon was pink for the whole thing.